going to continue in our book of Daniel. I want to read the last part of verse 4 of chapter 1. He ordered man to who was taking care of all of these young youths. He ordered him to teach them the literature of the literature and language of the Chaldeans. The Chaldeans seem to have had three different kind of languages. They were used in Babylon. One was Aramaic. You'll see it here in the book of 2 Kings chapter 18 and verse 25. Then Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, and all that, he said to the Rabshakeh, this guy that came invading, he says, "Speak now to your servants in Aramaic, for we understand it, but do not speak to us in Judean in the hearing of the people." Although he didn't want all the people to hear that we're going to invade you, we're going to do this. Just speak to us in Aramaic, so we understand Aramaic. The other one was Assyrian language. They had the Assyrian language, which was a Semitic tongue, and that was the language of legal documents and so on. And lastly, they had the Akkadian language, which was the sacred tongue. That's what they spoke to for certain church or superstition, religions, and so on. The bulk of their magical formulas came from the Akkadian language. That's Accadian, and it was at ritual things that were in Babylon and Nineveh were written mostly in that Akkadian language. So now here are these men. They're being told you're going to learn the literature and language of the Chaldeans, of all us here, people in Babylon. This is what you have to do. Now, they didn't say, no, we're not going to do it. You know, I know people that would probably say, oh, I'm not going to learn that pagan language. I'm not going to learn the language of other people. We have people who don't even want to learn English in our country of the United States when it's the language of business and commerce and everything, and they don't even want to do it. You know, they tend to refuse it. Daniel now, chapter 1, verse 5. I'm going to read this in the King James Version. The king appointed them a daily portion of the king's meat, means food, and of the wine which he drinks. And then it says, the King James says, so nourishing them 3 years. Well, nourishing them to us means that he's giving them the food to nourish them. That is not what that Hebrew word means. Here's what it should read. I'm reading from the New American Standard Version. The king appointed for them daily ration from the king's choice food and from the wine which he drank. And he appointed that they should be educated. The word nourishing doesn't mean built up and be educated 3 years. At the end of which they were to enter the king's personal service. Let me read that in the New English Translation. So the king assigned them a daily ration from his royal delicacies and from the wine he himself drank. They were to be trained. See, the word nourishing, it meant trained or educated. It had to do not with the physical nourishing of your body. It had to do with being trained. They were like in a military school. They were like in a private school. They were going to be trained. In complete training involves the entire physical sustenance. It involves developing the whole person. They had to be trained. They have to learn manners. They have to learn how to walk. They have to learn how to talk. They have to learn how to speak. It's like going to a finishing school, you know? So they were educated. These young men, it was going to take 3 years. Now, 3 years is like a college education. It's actually about the same as a 4-year college education because in those 3 years, they didn't get summers off. They didn't get it. It's like going to a military school. You have to be trained and trained and trained, and you don't get the summers off. So these young men were continuously being trained, taught. They stayed at it. It required an enormous amount of discipline on the part of the young men to stay, you know, to do well in school. They had to do well. They were not allowed to slough off. Because at the end of that, the king expected them to be trained in all the understanding of the Chaldean history, of all their history of their nation and so on. And they did not object to that. Isn't that interesting? At the end of the time which they entered the king's service, they would then, quote, stand. The King James says they would stand before the king. Now, the phrase stand before means you're in their service, you know. Elijah said this in his, he said, talks about God. I'm a servant of the Jehovah God before whom I stand. Before whom I stand. To stand before somebody is a term that means you're in their service. So Daniel chapter 1, verse 5, he appointed them a daily ration. The king assigned them a daily ration from his delicacies, from his wine, from the meat that he ate. I mean, the actual flesh, he was going to serve them. Now, they got them the new names. We know the new names, you know, Daniel verse 1, verse 6, chapter 1, verse 6 says, now among these sons of Judah were Daniel's three friends. Daniel means God is my judge. God is the judge. Hananiah meant God, Yah, is gracious. The eternal is gracious. Mishael meant who is what God is. El meaning God. Who is what God is. And Azariah meant Yah has helped me, has helped. So Daniel now, in chapter 1, verse 7, then the commander of the officials. Now, the word officials translated in the New American Standard Version, that word actually means eunuchs. He's the commander of the eunuchs. He's the chief eunuch, commander of the eunuchs. I don't know whether Daniel and his three friends were castrated. They might have been to be part of this so that he could concentrate only on things of what they had to do. They might have been. So Daniel and his three friends, they were assigned, to the commander of the officials or the eunuchs assigned new names to them. To Daniel, he gave the term Belteshazzar. To Hananiah, he gave the word Shadrach. To Mishael, he gave the word Meshach. To Azariah, he gave the word Abednego. We're not sure 100% of all of these Chaldean names, exactly what they mean, so I'm not going to venture into what that meant. Daniel chapter 1 and verse 8 now. Listen to this phrase. But Daniel made up his mind that he would not defile himself with the king's choice food. Now here's this young guy, taken away from his family. He's in a foreign country, but he made up his mind. I'm determined. I'm not going to do it. I'm not eating what they're going to serve me. I don't want that. He made up his mind not to defile himself with the king's choice food. Now how would he defile himself? And with the wine which he drank. So he sought. Now listen to how he does. He sought permission from the commander of the officials, that is, the commander of the eunuchs, that he might not defile himself. He sought that permission. Now, he needed favor, didn't he? He needed favor. But here's a guy who says, I want to obey God. I'm going to do what God wants me to do. And we know, listen to Proverbs chapter 23 and verses 1 through 3. Quote, when you sit down to dine with a ruler, consider carefully what is before you, and put a knife to your throat if you are a man of great appetite. Do not desire his delicacies, for it is deceptive food. That's the New American Standard Version, Proverbs 23, verses 1 through 3. But we also know that many of these animals that were killed were not bled properly. They were killed in a way that was not what we call kosher, and sometimes blood was a part of it. And Daniel did not want to do that. Listen to Leviticus chapter 17. Leviticus chapter 17. One of the things the Jews hated, and you remember what when they went out, the New Testament church said, no, you don't have to be circumcised. You don't. only these necessary things, avoid fornication and things strangled and blood. You remember? Because these were abhorrent to the Jewish Christians. Abhorrent. Because look at Leviticus chapter 17, verse 10. And any man from the house of Israel or from the aliens who sojourn among you, among the Israelites, who eats blood, I will set my face against that person who eats blood and will cut him off from among his people. That's how strongly God felt about eating blood. For the life of the flesh is in the blood, and I have given it to you on the altar to make atonement for your souls, for it is the blood by reason of the life that makes atonement. It's the blood, Jesus' blood. It was a symbol of Jesus' blood, okay? Now, we eat the blood. We take the symbol. We take only the symbol. We don't eat blood for the Passover or for the Lord's Supper, no. Therefore, I said to some of Israel, no person among you may eat blood, nor may any alien who sojourns among you eat blood. So when any man from the sons of Israel or from the aliens who sojourn among you in hunting, he catches a beast or a bird which may be eaten, he shall pour out its blood and cover the blood with earth. He's supposed to pour it out under the earth and cover it. Not supposed to be eaten. Psalm 119, verse 11 says, thy word I have treasured in my heart. This must have been the way Daniel felt. Thy word I have treasured in my heart, that I may not sin against you. But look at Psalm 119, dropping down to verses 104 and 106. From your precepts I get understanding. Therefore I hate every false way. Your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path. I have sworn and I will confirm it, that I will keep your righteous ordinances. Now here's Daniel in a foreign country. He made up his mind. The first thing you have to do, you're going to keep God's way, you're going to live God's way, you have to make up your mind. Now the manner in which Daniel proclaimed his convictions is most courteous. Okay, so we need to look at Daniel chapter 1 and verse 9. Now listen to what God says here. Well, this is the word of God. Now God granted Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the commander of the eunuchs, or the officials they call eunuchs. Now notice Proverbs 16 verse 7 says this, when a man's ways are pleasing to the Eternal, he makes even his enemies to be at peace with him. You know, you're in a concentration camp or something, you want a favor. And I was reading Man's Search for Meaning, and he talked about how sometimes one of the camp guards would be sort of merciful, sort of nice, give you an extra piece of bread, or gave him one. And he said he broke down and cried when that happened. Genesis chapter 39, verse 21. But the Lord, this is Joseph, this is what happened. But the Lord was with, the Eternal was with Joseph, and extended kindness to him, and gave him favor in the sight of the chief jailer. Now here's Joseph in jail, and God gave him favor. You know, people in jail and prison are treated pretty badly. But you know, if your ways please God, you might get favors, even from the jailers. Exodus chapter 3 and verse 21 says this, I will grant this people, talking about the people of Israel, I will grant this people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. And it shall be that when you go, you will not go out empty-handed. You know, you won't go empty-handed, because he's going to give people favor. God gives favor. When a man's ways please the Eternal, he grants them favor. And so in verse 10, the commander of the officials said to Daniel, now Daniel goes to him, you see, In verse 9, Daniel goes to him because he wanted this permission. So Daniel made up his mind that he would not defile himself with the king's choice food of the wine and we drank, and he sought permission from the commander of the officials, that's verse 8, that he might not defile himself. I would like not to defile myself with this. And God granted him favor. The commander, however, now says, you know, I'd like to do this favor for you. This is verse 9. Verse 10, I mean, the commander says, I'm afraid of my lord the king, who has appointed your food and your drink. He's the one that told me what I'm supposed to give you. I'm afraid of him, for why should he see your faces looking more haggard? You're not going to eat his food. You might lose weight. You might get real thin. You look haggard than the other youths of your own age. I don't want you guys looking. Listen to what the commander said. Then you would make me forfeit my head to the king. Now, the king is the boss, okay? The king is the absolute despot ruler. And you get in his way, and you're going to lose some favor here. You could lose your head. He said, you're going to make me lose my head to the king. But listen to verse 11, how Daniel says. But Daniel said to the overseer, and the King James Version, he's called Melzer, but the Melzer is a transliteration. It wasn't necessarily his name, but he's the overseer. Daniel said to the overseer, whom the commander, now the commander appointed another guy to do this. So the commander is like worried. Daniel goes to the overseer, the guy who's bringing the food and all that, whom the commander of the officials had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, over those four guys who are requesting this. And this is what Daniel says. Please test your servants for 10 days. And let us be given some vegetables to eat and water to drink. And then let our lend. Notice how he's very respectful. He realizes I put you in a bad spot. At the end of these 3 years, we're going to look more haggard and thinner and bad. Put us to the test for 10 days. Give us a chance here to do some eating and drinking. Give us these vegetables, these things. I'll tell a minute what that word vegetables meant. Then let our appearance be observed in your presence. Take a look at us after 10 days. And look at the appearance of the other youths who are eating the king's choice food. And then you deal with your servants according to what you see. We're so confident that if we go this way, we're going to look good. We're going to feel good. We're going to be sharp. So please test us 10 days. So in verse 14, so he listened to them in this manner. Respectful, willing to negotiate, giving another alternative. He listened to them and tested them for the 10 days. And at the end of the 10 days, their appearance seemed better. And they were fatter than all the youths who had been eating the king's choice food. So the overseer continued to withhold the choice food and the wine and to bring them, the vegetables. Now, the King James Version says pulse. It's a Hebrew word. It expresses any food that is grown from seeds. So it wasn't just carrots and beets and squash and rutabagas and that. It could also mean grains like wheat and millet and beans and lentils. You remember the famous Ezekiel statement in Ezekiel chapter 4 and verse 9? But as for you, take wheat, barley, beans, lentils, millet, and spelt. Put them in one vessel and make them into bread for yourselves, and you shall eat it according to the number of days that you lie on your side, 390 days. That's what he was supposed to eat every day. Now, that combination, according to the Ezekiel bread people, that's the foods for life, they make a thing called Ezekiel bread, made out of that. It has a complete protein. It has all the amino acids. It has all the things. So they didn't just eat vegetables. They ate the grains. They got a complete protein. Plus, they got all the vitamins and minerals out of the carrots. You know, the carrots, the root of the carrot has more than 200 vitamins, minerals, micronutrients, various oils and stuff like that. Carrot oil is very powerful. It has all kinds of stuff. People just don't know what's in these vegetables. Notice how they did it. They did it with tact, with courtesy. They didn't go in demanding. They said, you know, just put us to the test. Please let us not defile ourselves. We don't want to do it. And God gave them favor. And they used reasoning and the ability to negotiate. These are the things I usually tell people when they're getting married. What are you going to get married in this marital relationship? What are you going to need? You're going to need tact, courtesy, good reasoning, and the ability to negotiate. These are very helpful in any relationship. You know, you'll never find Jesus Christ being rude or crude or calloused in proclaiming God's word. He never did. He was never caustic. He was never rasping or brackish in his spirit. You know, some church members, they think, well, if they have to be firm, that means they have to be nasty. They have to get mad. They have to get mad to get firm. Don't think that you have to be mad to get firm. You don't have to become obstinate. You don't have to be turn your commitment into bigotry or your devotion into cantankerousness. You don't have to be nasty to people just because you want to be firm in your convictions. You can be very polite. No, sir, I'd like to ask permission for me not to do this. I don't want to defile myself with the king's food. And, well, I'm afraid you're going to lose weight, and then I'm going to have my head cut off. Well, how about if you put us to the test for 10 days? Okay, here we pick it up, verse 17. As for these four youths, God gave them knowledge and, King James says, skill. The word is translated in the American Standard Version as intelligence, but the word actually means the ability to act wisely, to behave themselves very wisely, to understand and to comprehend, to be able to be considerate and to consider, to discern, to be an expert, to have insight. It had a whole lot of things. In other words, They had to have knowledge, and we would put it all together, wisdom. In every branch of literature and wisdom of the Chaldeans, they had this knowledge and intelligence and this ability to act wisely and discern every area of literature and wisdom. Daniel even understood all kinds of visions and dreams, it says at the end of verse 17. Now, verse 18. Then at the end of the days, which the king had specified for presenting themselves, the commander of the officials, that is the eunuch, presented before them before Nebuchadnezzar. And the king talked with them. You know, he was going to ask them, how is your going? You know, I'm going to ask you some questions. He talked with them, and out of them all, not one was found. He talked to all these people. Not one was found like Daniel or Hananiah or Mishael or Azariah. So they entered the king's personal service right close to the king. And as for every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king consulted them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and conjurers who were all in his realm. In other words, all the people that were there already. And Daniel continued until the first year of Cyrus the king. Now, Daniel started serving in the Babylonian Empire. He continued all the way through Nebuchadnezzar and his son and the grandson Belshazzar, and all of a sudden, and the end of the kingdom, and all the way into Cyrus. Cyrus the Persian. The Cyrus is the one that sent them back, you know, gave the permission for the Jews to go back. I wonder if Daniel was still in up there in Persia, in the Babylonian area, because the Persians had taken over, and he was still there at the time when they went back. You know, it was 70 years punishment. You know, Jeremiah had the 70 years, and Daniel evidently lived to be a very old man. He could have been in his 90s by then. Daniel chapter 1 and verse 20. In every matter of wisdom and insight that he asked them about, they were 10 times. Now, so Middle Eastern literature, we have to understand, Middle Eastern literature often uses various figures of speech. It uses metaphors. It uses hyperboles. Hyperbole. What's a hyperbole? Well, a hyperbole is something like this, and you'll see it. There are a number of places where it says this. This was a battle like was never before nor ever will be. This is a time of trouble such as was not before this time nor shall ever be in the future. That is not to be taken literally. That is a hyperbole. It's part of the Middle Eastern culture. It's part of the Middle Eastern way. The Bible was written by men, but inspired by God. You have to understand how to read it. You have to understand what it means and what it's saying. For instance, when it says God is light, that is not to be taken literally. Otherwise, you're worshiping every light bulb. You know, it's not the thing. I just want you to understand that. They were 10 times better. He found them 10 times better. And Daniel continued all the way into Cyrus. 10 times is sort of in Hebrews, you'll see it here. You'll see the word 10. It kind of like... It's used several times. Look at Genesis chapter 1. Genesis chapter 31 and verse 7. When Jacob was telling his wife, Rachel, your father has cheated me by changing my wages 10 times. However, God has not allowed him to harm me. So 10 times became a sort of like a complete thing. He treated me completely badly, you know. Numbers chapter 14, verse 22 says, no one of the men who saw my glory and my miraculous signs that I performed in Egypt and in the desert who disobeyed me and tested me 10 times. Now, 10 times is not to be taken literal. How would you be able to measure whether these men could give answers 10 times better than the others? I mean, you know, how do you measure that? So it means they were so completely above the others, so completely that it was. There's no comparison. In Nehemiah chapter 4 and verse 12, then the Jews who lived near them came and told us 10 times over, wherever you turn, they will attack us. Told us 10 times over. In other words, they told us completely over and over again. And Job 19 and verse 3, 10 times now you have reproached me, shamelessly you attack me, Job said. This is Job 19 and verse 3. And in Ecclesiastes 7 verse 19, wisdom makes one wise one wise man more powerful than 10 rulers of a city. So 10 seemed to be like wisdom makes him more powerful and wiser than 10 people. Okay? Zechariah chapter 8, verse 23, looking at the word 10. This is what the Lord, the Eternal Almighty, the Lord Almighty says. In those days, 10 men from all the languages of the nations will take hold of one Jew by the hem of his robe and say, let us go with you because we have heard that God is with you. El is with you. Listen to this phrase. 10 men, all languages and nations. All languages? Well, there are more than 10 languages. So there's more than 10 different nations. But 10 men. will take hold of one Jew. So it means a complete chapter 2. Now, in the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams, and his spirit was troubled, and his sleep left. Now, in the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, okay, he had many dreams, as the New English translation, his mind was disturbed, and he suffered from insomnia. I thought that the young men, from the time King Nebuchadnezzar was king, were trained 3 years. They were trained 3 years, and yet it says it's in the second year of King Nebuchadnezzar. Now, a lot of people jump on to this. You know what they want to do? They want to say, well, this is just the way it is, and the Bible contradicts itself, and it's not true, and all that. No. The young men were trained 3 years. So here's the way the Chaldeans and the Babylonians measured kingship. Let's say a person is king, and he dies in the first 3 months of his reign, and so-and-so comes in and takes it over after that. The next person is not credited with that 9 months of rulership. He doesn't get credit until his rulership. Let's say a king was appointed in January, he dies in March. The next king starts in March and goes 9 months. And then he starts in January. His reign is reckoned from January. He's like, I'm going to be, and so 2 years, he could be 2 years and 9 months in office, and it's all considered to be 2 years. Now, that's why it says in the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, because he took his father's place. All right, chapter 2 of Daniel. And we're going to start in verse 2. The king gave orders. Now, he's troubled. He's upset. He's having these dreams. He's having insomnia. He's troubled in his mind. He's depressed. He can't figure this out. The king gave orders to call in the magicians, the conjurers, the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans to tell the king his dreams. So they come in, and they stood before the king. Now, when you're a despot, you know, you have total power. And, of course, life in that time didn't mean much. In some places, in some cities in America, it doesn't mean much either. People are shot every day. They're shooting little kids and so on. They're, you know, I don't know what, to some people in this country, life doesn't mean anything. They just soon shoot you as look at you, and your life means nothing. The king said to them, I had a dream. And my spirit is anxious to understand the dream. Now, I had a dream. So he's had many, many dreams, but now he's talking about one dream. I had a dream, and my spirit, my mind, my heart, my intention, I want to understand what this dream is. Verse 4, then the Chaldeans spoke to the king in Aramaic. O king, live forever. Tell the dream to your servants, and we will declare the interpretation. You know, Freud had interpretation of dreams. You tell Freud your dream, and he would give you an interpretation of what the dream meant. There are many interpretations of dreams. Whether they're true or not, whether they're right or not, no one really knows. But a lot of people have an interpretation of dreams. So tell me your dream. I'll interpret it for you. That's what they say to him. O king, live forever. You tell us the interpretation, we'll declare you tell us what the dream is, we'll tell you the interpretation. Listen to what the king says in verse 5. The king replied to the Chaldeans, the command from me is firm. Now, I think the King James says something like, the thing has gone from me. From the King James Version. The king answered the Chaldeans, the thing is gone from me. A lot of people look at that and say the king must have forgotten his dream. He forgot his dream. That's not what he's saying. What he's saying is, the command from me is firm. Or listen to the Good News to the Nations translation. There's a translation called Good News to the Nation, and it goes like this. The king answered to the astrologers, I meant what I said. If you don't tell me the dream and its meaning, You will be torn limb from limb, and your houses will be turned into piles of rubble. King James says, dunghill. So the king is saying, no, listen, I'm not going to just tell you that. I want you to tell me the dream. See, in verse 4, the Chaldeans tell us, tell the dream to your servants. But the king says, no, my command is firm. I want you to tell me by telling me what I dreamed. Tell me what I dreamed. And then tell me the interpretation. But verse 6, listen to the king's statement. He didn't trust these guys. These guys must have been a bunch of, you know, there are people that just continue on. They make rash, ridiculous statements about prophecy. They make stupid ideas about prophecy that never comes to pass. They've made prophecies for years and years. Didn't come to pass. It's going to happen in 5 years. It's going to happen in 10 years. It's going to happen in 15 years. Didn't come to pass. It's going to happen in another 5 years. It never comes to pass. It doesn't take. It's not taking place. But they continue, and people just listen to them over and over again. The king's not going to fall for this. Listen to what he says. But if you declare the dream and its interpretation, you will receive from me gifts and a reward and great honor. Therefore, declare to me the dream and the interpretation. I'm not going to give you the dream. I know what you're going to do. You're going to say, once you get the dream, you're going to say, this is interpretation. But I want you to tell me the dream. They answered. Now, they're put on the spot. They answered a second time. They're talking to the king. They're pretty bold here. Now let the king tell the dream to his servants. Please, just tell us the dream, and we will declare the interpretation. Don't do that. The king replied, I know for certain that you are bargaining for time. Inasmuch as you have seen the command from me, you've seen now that the command from me is firm. I'm not going to give you, I'm going to tell you, you've got a certain amount of time to get out here and tell me my dream and then tell me its interpretation. That if you do not make the dream known to me, verse 9, this is chapter 2, where there is only one decree for you. I'm going to kill you all. For you have agreed together. Now he doesn't trust them, see? For you have agreed together to speak lying and corrupt words before me until the situation is changed. Therefore, tell me the dream, that I may know that you can declare to me its interpretation. Tell me what it is. Well, once again, the Chaldeans answered, there is not a man, you know, they're just telling, well, there's not a man on earth who could declare the matter to the king. How can we tell you what your dream is? I mean, how do we know what your dream, you know, there's not a person here that could declare the matter to the king. Inasmuch as no king, now, number one, there's nobody that could do this. And number two, there's no king or ruler that has ever asked anything like this to a magician or his conjurer or a Chaldean. I mean, you're asking us the impossible, because there's nobody on earth that can do this. Moreover, verse 11, so there are three things they bring up. One, nobody could do this. There's no man on earth. Two, no king has ever asked this of us. You're asking something nobody's ever done. And number three, the thing which the king demands is difficult, and there is no one else who could declare it to the king except Allah. Allah, whose dwelling place is not with mortal flesh. Allah is not here. Allah could do it, but he's not here. And it's unfair to you. What they're saying is, king, it's unfair. It's unfair to you. Nobody can do this. No king has ever asked this. But he was not persuaded. And we'll talk about what happens to these people and how God saved them through his servant Daniel next week, chapter 2 of Daniel.